Good morning, everyone. Today is May 11th, and I'm excited to get into this word with you. In the last video, I promised that I would read some of the community posts in video form for anyone who has missed those or just aren't able to read through those for whatever reason. I know some of you like to watch these videos and listen to them as you're driving. Some of you drive for a profession. Some of you just to and from work, you know, like to put these on and just listen to them. And so just reading, maybe they don't even come up on your feed. Maybe you don't see things like that. Maybe you don't know how to access it, whatever. So I just wanted to make sure that was available in a friendly way for everybody who's interested in hearing those words, because I believe they are for all of us, and I believe they are at least a partial fulfillment of his promise to feed us nourishing meals that were easily grasped. That was his promise to us. And so I don't know what that's going to look like ultimately. I don't know if this is a partial fulfillment or if this is the thing, but I don't need to know that. Just trying to obey one step at a time and go where he leads me, and just trust him to do this the way that he wants to, and to surprise us along the way. So this video is follow-up in fulfilling that promise to you. And he has, you know, given me some other things to share, and I'm excited to see how he pulls all of this together. I know he will, in only a way that he can. And so before we get started, I was just praying a little bit ahead of time, and I just heard him say, "Tell them I am giving you these words to help you understand me more fully. I am building you up in preparation for what is to come." And I also want to say the Lord's Prayer before we get started with this video. Again, just seeing how he takes us into a deeper understanding of the kingdom and what it means to forgive, and you know, what it means, the bread of life, and feeding us, and all these things that are in the Lord's Prayer that he taught us to pray this way. So Jesus himself said, "This is how I want you to pray." So I'm always amazed at how this is just a prayer that I can just say and have absolutely no thought connected to it. But that's not what he wants, right? Because it's just a memorized prayer. He doesn't want our empty prayers. That does nothing. So when we're praying it, we want to really think about what is he teaching us through this prayer, and then connecting our spirit to it and offering it up as a prayer. So, "Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us." So there's been a bit of a storm that's been brewing inside of my soul in the last week. And it's because I've been sick, and I've really felt paralyzed. Like, I've been so fatigued, and my spirit, I've just felt kind of dull and confused, and just not getting a lot of clarity. And then I start to worry, you know, because I've made promises, and I feel... you know, it's important to walk in integrity and fulfill those promises. And I start to think about what that should look like. And Lord, it's been almost 2 weeks or however long it's been. And, you know, we were on a roll, and all of a sudden this, and what does that look like to others? And, you know, the timeline, it just seems like this is a critical hour. And what is being produced in my life right now? What am I doing for the kingdom? It just looks like everything's falling flat and nothing's being done, you know? And so I've just been like worrying, and he's let me wrestle with that. And he's really taught me something profound in all of it. And I'm excited to share that with you. So, you know, a few days ago, I would just be praying to the Lord for some direction. "Lord, am I disobeying you?" And I get the answer, "No, you're being faithful." I'm like, "But I'm not doing anything." He's like, "Yeah, you need to follow up and finish that. You're right. That is part of your assignment." I'm like, "Okay, so am I being disobedient?" No. So I just like felt confused about that. And so, you know, on May 9th, I was just like, "Lord, can you help me? Can you give me some direction?" I'm starting to feel a little bit more energized, and, you know, like things were about to happen. So what happens for me is, I just, when I'm ready to share, there's just like this bubbling up inside of something. He gives me something and it like starts to burn in my stomach. Like, I've got to get it out. I've got to get what he put in me. I've got to get it out. I don't know if that has anything to do with like when the words that the prophets were eating was like a sweet tasting scroll, but then it was sour in their stomach. I don't know if that's what they experienced. Like, it's just got to get back out. I'm not sure if that's what that meant or not, but that's kind of what I experienced. Like, he feeds me and it's so, so rich. And I feel like it's got to be shared and it's got to be offered out to the body. And so, I just hadn't been feeling that at all. And it was causing me to worry. And like, maybe I messed up, you know. That's when we don't understand something, a lot of times our natural human response is to fear. And, instead of saying, Lord, what are you teaching me in this? Lord, what is this lesson? What, you know, 'cause he's got purposes and he allows things to happen for a reason. And so on May 9th, I was just like, Lord, can you give me some direction? And he said, yeah, I want you to start with the Last Supper. And so I had been reading through all of those posts and I would just get overwhelmed because it seems like a simple thing. Get on and read the community posts. But as I was doing it, I just felt such confusion. Like, do I start at the beginning and read through it? Because like, they were timely when they were happening, but we've kind of passed that time. And so it feels weird to go back in time and then read them from that perspective. It's a different time right now. And so I didn't know if I started at the beginning and read through, if I read them all in one video, if I separated them, because some are short, some are long, and I would just get overwhelmed and kind of shut down and like, Lord, I don't know how to do this. I promised this thing, but I don't know how to do it. It seems simple, but I can't figure it out, you know? And so finally I was just like, Lord. And so I would just say, well, it must not be the time. I must not be ready to do this, right? So just let day after day go by. And so finally I was just like laying it before the Lord and he gave me some direction and he said, I want you to begin with the Last Supper. And I was like, the Last Supper? I don't remember talking about the Last Supper. And so I went back and I'm reading through them again. I'm like, oh, Passover meal. And it's out of order. But that's where he wanted me to start. So I was like, that's interesting. And so all of a sudden things just started to come into view, and he gave me eyes to see some things and just very unexpected things. And so that's where we're going to start. And then it started to get more and more miraculous as he was showing me things. So this is for anyone who's been reading the community posts. Some of this is going to be a review for you, but there's going to be some really cool, fresh anointing that the Lord has given us just for this particular moment. And what was really neat to me is, again, as I'm reviewing this word and a few other words, just the number 10 is popping out to me. And on May 9th, I realized it's 10 days before Pentecost. And then on May 10th, last night, I was just writing notes of all the things that he is revealing to me, and just kind of making a little bit of an outline. And I'm realizing, again, 10. And my Bible, I was looking at some things, and my Bible is falling apart. And it just kind of falls open where it falls open. Some pages aren't even connected anymore. And I look down as I'm realizing all these things and looking back at all the number 10, the tens in the Bible. My Bible opens up to another 10 that I hadn't seen before in Ezekiel 45. It falls open and my eyes just fix on the number 10. And it says, it's talking about the most holy place and the cubits are 10,000 feet wide, the measurements. And it was just confirming. I was just thinking about the most holy place. I was just thinking about something I was reading in Daniel, about the 10 toes. And I was just like, something I had just read in Jude about Jesus returning with tens of thousands. And I'm just like, I don't understand everything that he's saying about the number 10, but things are coming into view. And I just felt it was confirmation to the perspective the Spirit was giving to me in the moment. And so I was just like, wow, God, you let me wrestle with all of these things, but it's all happening 10 days before Pentecost, May 10th, and all these tens. And I'm like, you have an appointed time. And why do I let myself go into these fits inside, you know, these storms of fear and worry that are messing it all up. You completely knew, and you know, and I know this, you know, but he keeps asking me to apply the lessons that I know to these circumstances. And so that's kind of where we're going to go for just a moment before we get into that word. So what are the concepts that I continually have to, and truths about the Lord that I have to continue to apply for the renewing of my mind, is that he is not going along with any of this being surprised. He knows the end from the beginning. Christ was crucified before time began. All of this exists for his glory, and everything was made through him and for him and because of him. And we were foreknown and hidden in him, our true identity hidden in him before the time even began. And when we enter into Christ, the whole journey and the whole process is sanctified, and it's a process of sanctification, it's a process of becoming holy, and it's covered by the blood, and there's grace for us. And everything that the enemy intends for evil is used for good. It's used for our maturing and our growth and for teaching us, and it's strategic and it's precise, and it's done intentionally. It's not done haphazardly. We are carefully held by him. And our fears are really rooted in not understanding him correctly and not taking captive thoughts and submitting them to the truth of who Christ is. He is absolutely sovereign. He is absolutely love. He is absolutely aware of everything and present in all of it. And so we look at the story of Joseph again. You know, we've talked about this, but it's just so important to really keep these things in mind, because the more he obeyed, the worse things seemed to get for him. And what the Lord's been showing me is what is happening out here. And it looks like no evident growth is happening on the external. It's because roots are being grown, and those roots are being grown in those times. He gave Joseph a promise back here. He was immature. He was arrogant. And the Lord took him on this journey. And what the enemy meant for evil, the Lord used for good. The Lord used it to grow his roots so deep. Because Joseph feared. He feared more than anything. The fear of God means being afraid of losing his touch. Joseph feared the Lord so much that he obeyed and obeyed and obeyed. And it seemed like his obedience was making things worse for him. But really, God was taking him and saying, okay, I want you to apply it in this situation, what you know to be true. And I want you to apply it in this situation, what you know to be true. And I want you to apply it in this situation. I'm going to keep growing those roots. Those roots are going to grow so deep that when the promise finally comes to fruition, when you arrive at your destiny, you're prepared. You are deeply rooted, and you are strong, and you are prepared to handle the thing that I've called you to. We look at the situation with Jesus. He was killed. You know, it seems on the external, it seems like the enemy won, but all of it was for God's glory, and it all happened at the appointed time in the appointed way. If you think about the whole timeline of everything that had to happen, exactly how it happened in order for Jesus to arrive 4,000 years after the sin event and to be crucified 4,000 years after the sin event, he arrived on time, exactly on time. What had to happen in order for Jesus to get there right on time? How many lives had to happen, and marriages had to happen, and births had to happen, and things had to happen exactly how they happened in order for Jesus to arrive on time? Do not underestimate. We underestimate God and what he is capable of and who he is, how sovereign he is, how precise he is. He said in the very beginning of this, and I didn't have a revelation of that then, and I continually have a deeper and profound revelation of who he is. He says, Melissa, I am mysterious, but I am precise. Oh my goodness, is he precise. But here's the lesson that he's been showing me. He gives us the promise, but he wants us to forget also about the promise. He gives us the promise in the beginning, but he doesn't want the promise to be our focus. Because when the promise becomes our focus, we try to help the promise along. We try to imagine what that should look like. And we try to imagine what we think the path is going to be to get to that promise and make it come to maturity. And he says, no, I'm giving you that promise in the beginning because I want to wow you. Because I want to wow you when we get to the destiny of how I got you there. I want to reveal to you the story. I'm the master storyteller. I'm the master builder. I'm the author and finisher of your faith. Will you enter into the journey with me? Will you allow me to show you the process the way that I have it written for you? And he invites us into this relationship, and it's so intimate. And he wants us to focus on him and have our desire to be him more than the promise. And that's the lesson. And when we do that, he grows our roots and he prepares us so that we can handle anything, because he, in the process, he's revealing who he is to us. And we were made by love for love. And we find our identity in this space. We find what we are created for. And we discover him. And that's what this is about. And he gave me this just quick flash of an image this morning of, he showed me how I do not like to jump into water. I like to stick my toe in to see if I want, how quickly I want to wade in. And even if it's warm, I still wade in slowly and prepare myself each step of the way for what I think I'm about to experience. I don't like surprises. I don't like to not be in control. I don't like, I like to do things the way I want to do them and with my own expectations, and I react to my own expectations. And he gave me a quick picture of him standing in the water in a dock and just asked me to jump in. Didn't want me to stick my toe in it, just jump in. And he keeps taking me to different situations and giving me that instruction to jump in. But he began gently. He began by leading me to the water and teaching me next to the water how to rest in him. He taught me I was afraid of him. I didn't understand him. And he taught me what it feels like to be in his presence. He taught me what it feels like to experience his peace. He taught me how to rest. I didn't know how to rest. I lived a really worldly life. It was very goal-oriented. It was very much driven by my own desires and my own goals and my own visions of what I thought things should look like. And I was always working toward those things. And I was very goal-oriented, very busy. I had no idea how to rest anymore. Resting was a memory I had as a kid. I used to be able to sit outside and read a book and read the Bible and be at perfect peace and rest with the Lord. That was a memory. It was no longer my reality. I went through some trauma. The world started spinning. I had no idea how to enter into rest. And he had to teach me that. And my root system that he is growing is giving me different opportunities to practice being at rest with him, keeping my eyes focused on him and trusting him to jump into the water and having his smile be what it's about. It's just being with him and just delighting in him and just allowing him to teach me this lesson of being able to take risks with him because I'm at rest in our relationship and I trust him more than anything. this is the lesson, and this is the root system. And I can identify with Joseph because I'm seeing what the Lord was doing. He was taking, once you have a taste of him, you don't ever want to be without him. And that's what the fear of the Lord is. The fear is not being afraid of a hard master, like the parable of the talents. He doesn't want us to fear him like he's a hard master. He wants us to be afraid to live without his touch, without his presence. That's what the fear of the Lord is. And he's really starting to help me understand this. And Joseph had that kind of fear. More than anything, he feared not being in that intimate space with the Lord, because it's evident, because Joseph obeyed the Lord in really hard situations. He obeyed, and he didn't stop obeying. And it seemed like the more he obeyed, the worse things got for him. But it was because the thing he feared the most was being without his presence. And because of that, his roots were growing so deep, and he was being established in the Lord in order to be able to handle the awesome destiny that the Lord had prepared for him. He was second in command over all of Egypt, trusted with so much, and he had so much wisdom because of his deep root system. So anyway, the Lord just revealed to me, you know, what was going on. And so when the tree isn't visibly, and this is a lesson that came out at church the other night, we were talking about the parable of the seed. And I was just like, the woman that often speaks and says, thinks so profoundly in the Holy Spirit, like I was hearing her, and I knew that the Lord was revealing something, but revealing something to my physical mind, you know, that was really important. And I spoke something along these lines. So even my spirit was trying to reveal it to my mind. And I just feel like the Lord's really putting this lesson together in a way that that can be communicated. And so when the tree isn't visibly producing, when you look at Joseph's life and you don't see the external evidence of what the Lord's doing, because he was obeying and things were getting worse for him, there didn't look like there's any growth happening. It's because the attention and all of the efforts and all of the energy was going to the root system during that time. And so when the Lord allows certain things and certain wrestlings to happen, and when it visibly didn't look like anything was being produced, he showed me, no, I'm growing your roots here. I'm revealing to you that I have allowed this to happen out of my sovereignty, because I'm teaching you something that you need to know in preparation. Because he says, let the wheat and the tares grow together. Let the wheat and the weeds grow at the same time. Because if you uproot the weeds, you might uproot the wheat. So what's he talking about there? The roots. I don't know if you worked in the garden much. I don't work in it like my husband works in it, but I work in the garden some, weeding. Some of those weeds got some major roots going on, and it does uproot the plants. You got to be careful. Our roots, he's growing so that they're deeper than the weeds. So when the storm comes and when he is uprooting the weeds, we don't get uprooted with it. He wants our root system to be established and deep and strong, so when the storms come, places where there's a lot of storms, the trees have really deep root systems, because it keeps them from getting blown away. And he doesn't want us to be so focused on the promise that we forget about the process, because in the relationship, in that journeying with him and keeping our eyes fixed on him and entering fully and jumping fully in, not wading in casually, not touching our toe in, and just like full of doubt, sort of testing the waters of God. No, he wants us to jump fully in so that he can reveal to us lessons designed for each of us individually to prepare us for the things he has planned for us that he alone knows. He alone has the map of how to get there. And he wants us to look at him and follow him one step at a time and let him be our shepherd. I'm getting a revelation of this right now. When the Lord called Moses and he gave Moses his promise, and Moses' reaction was, "No, Lord, choose somebody else. I can't be your mouthpiece. I stutter. I stammer. I can't speak. Choose somebody else. You can't mean this for me." And God's response was, "Who gave you your mouth?" Created the mouth? Who created words to speak? Do you know who I am? I want to wow you. I want to reveal my goodness to you. His anger burned because Moses wasn't getting it. Through our weaknesses, he's glorified. Through our weaknesses, we journey with him and we go through the process with him. And we experience the miracles with him. And he delights in showing us what he is able to do. And he chooses us sometimes because of our weaknesses. Because there is where the journey of faith is. And he wants to take us to those deep places and heal us. Whew. When Jesus called the disciples to himself, he said, "Come follow me and I will make you fishers of men." He gave them this promise of being fishers of men. Do you think they understood how in the world he was going to do that? But he said, "Come, follow me. Look at me. Let me lead you there." He had major important roles for these people to play. And they couldn't understand it. But they kept looking at him and they kept following him and they kept keeping their eyes fixed on him. And even though there was mistakes and all of these things, all of that was for his glory, is to teach us, to teach them profound and deep truths. And there's treasures and treasures and layers through their stumblings and their confusion and their doubts and their mistakes. There's treasure for us hidden in all of that because he uses every bit of that for our good and for his glory. And he is so mysterious and he is so much more patient than we are. He's so much more wise than we are. He's so much more humble than we are. And the more we journey with him, the more we realize his true character and who he is and what love looks like. But we miss it if we don't enter into fully, we don't enter into Christ fully, if we just stick our toe in and doubt and try to control the process ourselves. Things move slowly and they are uninspiring. And that's what makes him angry, because he's got such depth. He wants to reveal to us love. We were created by love for love, and he wants us to jump fully in. Especially if we stutter and stammer. Especially if we are incapable of doing the thing he has. He already knows our talents that he gave us. Okay? He knows our giftings. He calls us in our weakness. Because through our weakness, we're made strong. It is a deep, profound paradox, and I hope you're catching it. Whew. I know this seems like it's like way off base from the Lord's Supper, but I just see how he's tying this together, and it's amazing, and I hope I can verbalize it. I'm just going to trust him. Okay, so this is going to seem like it's a tangent, but I believe it all comes back around. So the Lord you know, I was just thinking about where to make this video. I thought I was going to make it at night, so I was just trying to plan a place that would not be disruptive to my family, and I thought of the garage. So here I am out in the garage with my husband's stuff. And what's going on is he's got all of these really old Bibles, and I've shared some of our testimony before. If you're new to this channel and you want to know our testimony, just click the videos, go back to the very first video. It gives a detailed account of our testimony, mine and our families is talked about there. So I'm not going to go into all of that. Some of you have heard it a million times. And parts of this you've heard before. But my husband, a few days before Passover, said, "Melissa, I think on Passover, I'm going to be finished with the Bible for the fifth time." In 2 years, my husband has read the Bible 5 times. He's become somewhat of a Berean, a studier of the Word. He loves the Word. He devours the Word every day, pretty much faithfully every day. In the morning he gets up, or sometime throughout the day if he can't do it in the morning. But pretty much every morning he reads 10 chapters of the Bible a day. He also spends some time letting the Lord guide his study. He spends a lot of time maybe in a certain book the Lord's given him, or he just opens the book up and the Lord speaks to him. And this is something that I've heard people caution against a lot over the years of my life. Don't just open the Bible up and think that the Lord's speaking to you. That's dangerous. Well, I'm just going to give you this testimony. Because the Lord has a different plan and a purpose and a destiny and a way to get there. It looks different for every single person. He alone knows the plans that he has for you, because he knows what your function is in the body, and he knows how to get you there functioning. And it looks different. And when you're tempted to compare your journey to somebody else's journey, don't do it. When you're tempted to compare your journey to what you think it should look like Moses, don't do it. My husband was in special classes growing up because he can't read hardly at all. Like, he can't read very well. I mean, that's changed. The Lord's actually changed that a lot. But his entire life, he'd never read a book because it's not enjoyable to him. He's got some dyslexia. He struggles with it. His comprehension is amazing when he's read too. Like, it astounds me. My comprehension is not anywhere close to what his is, and I'm the more academic person. His comprehension is really good. He's very intelligent in so many ways. He is a brilliant contractor. He does meticulous, he's a perfectionist. Like, in his work, it's very meticulously done, and it's beautiful. He does amazing work when he builds homes and remodels things. He just has such skills that the Lord has given him, such skills. He's intelligent. He's intelligent at gardening. He's got this natural intelligence of just the earth, you know? He works in the earth. He is just like mills trees and builds things and sees things, and it's easy for him. I have none of that intelligence, you know? We're very different people. And he amazes me. He likes to garden and to can the food, and everyone just raves about how delicious it is, and they don't want him to ever change his recipes, you know, and he's just very good at a lot of things. And I marvel at his intelligence and a lot of things, but reading is not his strength. When we were first dating, I bought him this big study Bible, because when we first met, he was kind of going through this counterfeit version of repentance, you know. He was doing it out of his own power for his own reasons of just trying to be a better person, because his life turned into a mess and he just was trying his best to survive it and to think of a new approach and just to be a whole different person. But of course it didn't work, and it fell apart because it wasn't rooted and grounded in truth and in Christ. And the Lord's using all of these things, you know, as part of his story. But during that time, I was excited for him. I bought him this Bible, a big, thick study Bible, NLT, with all kinds of pictures and all these things, the kind of Bible I would love to have. I was offended. He did not want that Bible. He shelved it. He forgot he had it. He had a thin King James Version Bible that there's no way he could have read it. He never did read it. But just sentimentally, that was his Bible. It had some pictures of his family in it. And he didn't want another Bible. That was his Bible. He knew nothing about the Bible, knew nothing about God. He didn't even believe in God. But that was his Bible, his family Bible. And that's, you know, what he had on the shelf. And so he was kind of offended by my gift. Why would he need another Bible? He's got a Bible. He spent some time incarcerated for something, you know, that he didn't do, but he was into things that weren't honorable. You know, after that period of time of his counterfeit repentant period, he went back to old habits. And he'd been doing drugs since he was a kid, pornography, you know, all kinds of things. And so anyway, while he was incarcerated for a brief amount of time, I think it was like 30 days or something, he met somebody, and that person was witnessing to him. And so while he was in there, he was reading the Bible, and he was writing me letters, and I was getting so excited and encouraged. You know, seeds were being planted, but those seeds didn't take root. It wasn't his time. I don't know if the birds snatched it up or if the weeds choked it out, whatever happened. You know, there's a brief period of time where things were looking like maybe he was going to grasp hold of some truth and get delivered from these addictions and things. And, you know, we moved to this. And during, I'm saying that because during that time, my mom was also excited for him, and she bought him a DVD series of the word being read. And it matched the Bible I gave him. And I was excited about that. It was an NLT version. He didn't understand it. He didn't, had no interest in it. Shelved that. Years later, we move over here to this new property. And, you know, promises were made. And I just knew that there was no future for us if it couldn't be rooted in truth. And I wanted to get to the truth, but I just couldn't get there. And I just, you know, I've been through the trauma, and my life just felt like it all fell apart. And I was just trying to find some place to land. And I didn't know how to land. And I was looking for it in men and trying to find, you know, something to grasp hold of and something to establish new roots in and things. And we were two very broken people, and it was just a bigger and bigger mess. And, you know, when we moved over to this new property, it sort of felt like a new beginning. Promises were made. And again, back to the drugs. And I just, like, that's where I was when I cried out to the Lord, like, God, I don't have the strength to start again. And I know that there's no future here. I can see that this is an impossible situation. He just can't get it. He's never going to get it. And I don't know that I get it. I don't even know if you still love me. I've made such a mess. You know, I've been yoked to this person that's not a believer. I wanted him to lead me to you. I wanted to find you somehow through this experience, and I'm just getting further away. I feel so much shame, so much regret, but I'm stuck, you know, and I've shared some of that in our testimony. So that's where we were. And he was getting involved in something that he didn't know was demonic. He thought it was some kind of like mind control from electronics or something, you know. He spent a lifetime doing drugs. He heard voices in his head. They're comforting to him. He listened to them. It was a normal experience for him. He had sensitivity to the spiritual realm. He didn't know that's what it was. He didn't even think God existed. He didn't look at it through that lens. He didn't connect the dots, really, you know. He had no language for any of that. But he got involved in something, listening to some pretty dark things, and all of a sudden, it got so dark, he realized what was going on. He realized, and he cried in desperation out for God to save him. He He was so terrified. And God did. He showed up right then. Changed everything. And around the same time, I was crying out to the Lord too. And God revealed himself to me through this dramatic change in my husband. And then he went to work on me. And I had a lot of religious self-righteousness in me that he had to deal with, and it was ugly, and it was a storm, and it was brutal. It was brutal, whereas my husband, he showed so much grace. My journey did not look like his journey, and it still doesn't. The drugs fell off of him in that moment. He's not touched them since. Even chewing tobacco, which wasn't even ever on the radar of something to give up, the Lord took all of it away. I mean, he'd done that since he was really young. You know, he's a 48-year-old man. And then he was, you know, like 46. A lot of years of doing this stuff. And the Lord just took it away and made it easy for him. He wrestled with this his whole life. He showed me in his own power. It was impossible for him to give these things up. He sometimes wanted to. Sometimes he wanted to. But he couldn't. He couldn't. So the Lord in his weakness showed his glory. Gave him a testimony, gave him a ministry. So my husband now is saved, and the Lord takes him to this building. We have this house that we bought. He bought it at auction really inexpensively because it has a ballroom on the third floor. And it's a house that was built in the late 1700s, early 1800s, in the town of Rome. You know, they often have dreams about this town. I don't know what the Lord's going to do with this building. I hope he does something way more awesome than, you know, what our plans for it were, which was for me to teach dance out of it and to restore it, you know. It was a place where it's three stories high, and the stagecoach, it was one of the first buildings, maybe the first building established in Rome, where the stagecoach would come and people would stay there. So it's got on the second floor tons and tons of rooms. I forget, like 9 bedrooms or something. And then they had community dances, and they had a piano up there, and people wrote on the wall, signed their names of just these historical figures in our community, you know, that came over from England and established, you know, roots in this community, and the families are still here. And it's just really a neat piece of history. And so it just didn't work out because it's on a small lot of land, and, you know, like to have a business there, you have to put elevators in, you have to do all these things, a new septic system, and it's not zoned correctly, and there's no room for a new septic system, just all those things. And in order to run a business, we'd have to live there. And we don't want to live there in town, really. And so we have this building. Well, when we moved over here, we have moved a lot of things in boxes and use it kind of as storage. You know, there's things in boxes there. Well, I'm saying all of this because when he got saved, the Lord took him there to a box. And when he first got saved, he heard the Lord very easily, you know, through the Rhema word, just experiencing him that way. Lord takes him to this box, and there he finds the Bible and that DVD that was established way back here. God knew the right moment, and God made a way. When he was hungry, and when he had had a taste, and when he was ready, he knew the hour of his awakening. And he made a way for my husband to devour the word, even though he can't read. So a few days before Passover, he's telling me, Melissa, I'm about to finish the Bible for the 5th time. And I think it's going to happen right on Passover. And Passover is like really significant in his journey, because one of the things the Lord said to him, the very first thing was, I want you to get your house in order. And so he said, I want you to get all the leaven out of your house for Passover. So we literally did that. You know, we went through our house and we took out all the leaven. We didn't eat any leaven during Passover. And the Lord is teaching us about what leaven means, and it's sin, and it's anything that puffs us up, and it's false understandings of who God is, and all of these things, you know, all these fleshly things, getting them out of our house, getting them out of our house and preparing. And so Passover is really special to him because we had that journey with the Lord, and it was right in the beginning. And so we're just celebrating, you know, just the miracle that the thing that he's weakest in has now become his strength. He is a studier of the word. He is a lover of the word. He collects all of these Bibles, whereas he'd never read a book before. Look at all the books behind me. Where we are weak, he wants to be glorified in those spaces because he wants to show us what he is capable of doing. And there are our own personal miracles and experiences. And it doesn't look like, my experience doesn't look like what his experience looks like. On the surface and to the natural mind, it seems like he was already sensitive in the spirit. He already could hear from the Lord. And now he doesn't hear from the Lord so much that way. Now he primarily hears from the Lord by reading his word. And sometimes he gets jealous or fearful because why doesn't the Lord speak to me that way anymore? He did in the beginning. A lot of his grace he did. He took the thing that was natural and easy for him. But he transitioned him and made him strong where he was weak. And now that's primarily where he gets fed. And when I say that, I mean, supernatural stuff is going on a lot. And one of the first examples of him just opening the Bible and the Lord speaking to him that way, it happens a lot with him. I want to say daily because it seems like daily, sometimes multiple times in a day, but a lot. One of the first times, like, his whole body just flooded in goosebumps, just so excited to tell me. He's listening on the radio and it said that there's only one place in the Bible where Jesus sings. And he got really curious about that. He wanted to find where that place was and why did Jesus sing? And did Jesus really sing? And the next morning, you know, he's praying however he prays, like, Lord, like, I'm here, I'm listening, just guide our time together, teach me what you want to teach me kind of thing. Opens his Bible right exactly to the page where Jesus sang. And he's just so excited, you know. And this is the thing that happens for him all the time. And he takes notes of these things. And this is how you have a relationship with an unseen God. As you just follow him into these areas and you just let him teach you, and he gives you spiritual eyes to see the spiritual things that he's revealing to us. And it's just amazing. And on the outside, it looks like it should be the opposite. I'm the one who's more academic. Yes, I read the word daily. I get fed by the word. I love to devour the word too. I love to encounter Jesus in the word of God. But he did something impossible for me. The place he primarily speaks to me is through the Rhema word. Whereas I felt like he was a faraway God, that, and even if he were close, he wouldn't want anything to do with me because I'd messed up so much. I didn't even think I should exist. Just the nature of my coming to be in this world was so shameful. I felt so ashamed. I thought I was one of the weeds. I thought I was born to be a weed. I thought that he didn't want me, that I was born out of sin and I wasn't one of his. And I loved him, you know, from afar. I loved learning about Jesus. I believed in him, you know, but then there was a period of my life where I didn't know what I believed in anymore. Everything was just spinning. I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. And that's where I was crying out, Lord, I think you exist. Nothing else makes sense to me. You know, maybe I've just been programmed to believe this certain story, but I want to know the truth. Can you reveal the truth of who you are to me? Can you break through this dense mind? Because I just don't know. And I would sit in church, I'd take my son to church. I thought maybe there was hope for him. You know, they prayed over him while he's in my stomach. You know, maybe there's hope for my son to get it. But I thought it was too late for me. They would ask me in church to hear from the Lord and just sit quietly and listen to what he's saying to you. I felt so far away from the Lord. I felt like I was in this walled in area that was impenetrable. I just felt so alone in there that nothing could ever break through. And then that's my area of weakness. And there's a whole, you know, long story with that. But he's taken that area of weakness, my hard head, my hard heart, my inability to hear in the spirit at all, and he's made that impossible area, he's turned it into a miracle, my own personal miracle, and he's made it into my ministry. And so my journey looks different than my husband's, and your journey looks different than mine. He's got areas that are impossible that he wants to show you how he can break through them, and how generous he is, and how tender he is, and how gracious he is, and to reveal who he is to you. In your areas of wounding, in your areas of captivity, he comes to set you free. So anyway, when my husband had that first experience with the Lord saying, guess where he sang? At the Last Supper. Isn't this amazing how the Lord brings things around? Who could have imagined this? These Bibles behind me, my husband's got his name out in the community. He loves old stuff. You know, he's different than I am. He loves antiques and collecting things. And, you know, it's partly why this, it's a good thing we have this house in our life, because he can collect these things and put them somewhere. But he's got antiques, and he goes to the antique vendors in our area and lets them know he's looking for old Bibles. So we're always in to libraries and people who do estate sales. We're always getting phone calls from people that have a Bible for him to come look at. And he gets so excited and he goes and he looks at this Bible and he reads these Bibles. Like, he compares them to the NLT version that he has, and he looks for anything that might be left out or change in language. And then he explores that and he learns things that way, like the old fashioned way. He doesn't just get on the computer and look at all the different versions and translations of a verse. Like, he's in it and he's doing it that way. He's in a book, studying a book. Do you see? I hope that you're seeing how profound this is, how miraculous this is. Our true identity is hidden in Christ and is not anything that we think it should look like. It doesn't make sense in the natural. It's supernatural. And when you enter into the supernatural life, the supernatural becomes more real than the physical. You start to have a whole another way of being, and no other way of relating to the world. Your blindness is cured. Your ears can hear. Your lameness, you can now walk in the spirit, and you can see what the Lord's revealing and hear what he's teaching. He didn't just come to heal the physical. He came to heal the whole person, the spiritual. That's where it's at. He does not want us to miss this. He doesn't want us to miss the process. He wants us in the journey with him, because the depth of who he is revealed and seen only there. When Abe was first walking with the Lord, he would just open the Bible up. This is the way the Lord does it for him. And the Lord started to build the armor of God. He started to establish that understanding. He took him first to all of the scriptures. This is the first thing the Lord did with him. Took him to all the scriptures that explained what salvation was, righteousness, faith, the word of God, the gospel of peace. He showed him each of the pieces of the armor. And then he took him to Ephesians and revealed to him what was being taught. That was the initial journey. And recently, Abe was able to teach that to the small group that we meet with. He was able to show them what the Lord showed him and the way that the Lord showed him. And it was just really awesome. And that is how, you know, the Lord starts to grow roots, and then he keeps building and building and building and building on those specific things. And and they're custom made. That was custom made for him. And then Abe began to write verses down and put them in different places in the house, like in his coffee cabinet, you know, where he opens up the stuff for his coffee, on the back side of that. Every morning he reads these foundational things, the things that were established in the very beginning, the things that started the journey with the Lord. This is how you have a relationship with an unseen God. He keeps building on these things. The things he builds on for me are different than the things he builds on for Abe, because Abe has his own purpose and his own destiny, and I have my own purpose in the body and my own destiny, and he's taking us to our destinations, and it looks different. And so we're tempted to compare and contrast. That's coming from fear and an orphan spirit of what we think it should look like, rather than trusting the author and the finisher of your faith. Your journey is hidden in him, and it is special. It's special. You are special. You are carefully held. You are carefully designed. I didn't know that. I didn't believe that. But it's true. That's how big he is. He's that big. We underestimate him when we don't believe these things. He's that big. I didn't think. I thought it was just kind of hokey. The people thought that he really cared about the details of our life. Now I see. Now he's given me eyes to see just how intimate and how in the details he is in everything. He is, and it's true.